The reading from Canto 2, Chapter 6. Today we'll cover 35 and we'll see how far we get into 36. Lord Brahma speaking to Narada. He completed describing the first Sushupta prayers and his position in relation to the whole matter of creation, and questions previously asked by Narada have been answered, so he's just making his concluding statements in the chapter. So in this first verse that we're going to discuss this morning, he's making a disclaimer, which is that he doesn't have, despite his elevated stature and qualification, he can't understand the Supreme Lord. But it may sound like a contradiction, because in the previous verse he said, whatever I have said is perfect. Now he's saying, I don't understand the Supreme Lord. But it's not a contradictory statement. It's a perfect statement. And Prabhupada connects the purport with the previous verse, which is the very same subject that we spoke about yesterday afternoon. This enthusiasm or eagerness, different words are used, earnestness or zeal, as in enthusiasm. That's the qualification that Brahma says entitled him to be under the control of the Supreme Lord, reach the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, have his mind and senses fully under the Lord's direction, to realize the Lord and make his speaking perfect, because it's not his own speaking. That's the logic. Anything that as individuals we may do, guaranteed is going to be imperfect. And anything that the Supreme Lord does, guaranteed is going to be perfect. If one can be under the control of the Supreme Lord, then his actions or her actions fall in that category. Under the control of the Supreme Lord means perfect. Once Prabhupada spoke like this, I may be an imperfect person, but if I speak the words of a perfect person, my speaking is perfect. So there's several very important... the focus right now is going on to Brahma, or even in a general way, the speaker of Vedic wisdom. And if the speaker of Vedic wisdom is has this qualification that Brahma has, he can perfectly represent the Lord. The word from the previous verse is redoubt kanta kantya vata redoubt Kantya Vata. Prabhupada has translated it in different ways: by great earnestness, with great zeal, and here it's by eagerness of the heart. Hridi Utkantya Vata. this is that eagerness component, not just doing dutifully or doing cosmetically or complacently or routinely, but doing with a spirit of eagerness. Is it not a fact that when we try to render our devotional service with that kind of very, 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 very special effort, what's the realization? I'm so limited. We don't realize that so clearly when we're just kind of going along. We're just kind of going along. But the realization, when we're very sincere, earnestly endeavoring, this word that's here that describes, Brahma's describing his own efforts, we realize how tiny we are and how vast the Supreme Lord is. How can we become one with him, or how can we control him, or how can we know him? If our mission is like a fruitive worker, I gotta get my hand on this Krishna and know that subject, then we'll feel disappointed. But if for a devotee it's another enthusing factor, my Lord is so wonderful, and because he's very merciful, he'll help me. So that's what is flowing from the previous verse into this verse. Brahma is saying, I don't know him. Don't know him in fullness, as Brahma might know some other subject in fullness. But even the Supreme Lord doesn't know himself in fullness. He's so full. Look, so this is, here's the verse. Brahma says to Narada, although I am known as the great Brahma, perfect in the disciplic succession of Vedic wisdom, and although I have undergone all austerities, and also I am an expert in mystic powers and self-realization, and although I am recognized as such by the great forefathers of the living entities who offer me respectful obeisances, got a lot of credential, still I cannot understand him, the Lord, the very source of my birth. Yatha Atma Sambhavaha. This is very similar, as we say, it's practically identical with the message of the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. In the first 7 verses of the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is explaining this very same point, saying that all beings that are created can't know their source of emanation. All beings that are created cannot know their source of emanation. You can guess. Before I existed, something. Before this apartment complex was here, there was a forest. Likely. We don't know for certain. Maybe it was something else. And the details of that something else, certainly we don't know. So because it existed before we got here, before you came into being, so to speak, what existed before you came into being? You can't know. That's what Krishna is saying in the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Of course, if the Supreme Lord who existed before you came into being discloses, then you can know. By that method. But otherwise, you cannot know. However, whatever your qualifications are, got a long list of them, still you can't know. So then how is Krishna knowable? And Krishna is knowable through devotion. And a certain kind of devotion. This Hridaut Kantya Vata. And here's the purport. Brahma, the greatest of all living creatures within the universe, is admitting his failure to know the Supreme Lord despite his vast learning in Vedic wisdom, despite his austerity, penance, mystic powers, and self-realization, and despite being worshipped by the great Prajapatis, the forefathers of the living entities. So, these qualifications are not sufficient to know the Supreme Lord. Brahmaji could understand the Lord to a little extent only when he was trying to serve him by the eagerness of his heart. Hridyaut Kantya Vata, which is the devotional service mood. That's nice. Devotional service and the devotional service mood. Devotional service, one can say, is a certain activity. And then that activity should be taken up with a nice mood. Therefore, just repeating the same message but in different language, the Lord can be known only by sincere mood of eagerness for service. Can you recall hearing this yesterday in the Nectar Devotion message? The Nectar Devotion, it's written, same idea, that in order to advance on the spiritual path, there must be eagerness to render a particular service, or our service to the Supreme Lord. Each of us, we have a different nature, and so according to that nature, each of us has a particular service. And it's not that Krishna looks, oh, that's a high service, and oh, that's just a low service. Krishna doesn't look like that. As in the crossing of the ocean to Lanka, there was the Hanuman, and according to which version of the line, it's either a squirrel or a spider, and kicking sand, and Hanuman. No, that service is as good as your service, because he's serving to his full capacity and you're serving to your full capacity. So that service is respected by me as much. It's not which particular service or which particular capacity we have for service that in the eyes of Krishna is much appreciated or accepted with the love. It's the love with which the service is offered, or whatever the capacity we have, we strive to serve according to our capacity. I mean, that's the connection, that's the loving reciprocation position for each of us. Very important. I mean, it's easy to remember it sitting here and we're the deities and we're at Bhagavatam classroom, but when life starts to move on, it's very important to remember. That's when we will feel connection with Krishna, and Krishna will be very pleased with our service. If the spirit or the mood behind the service, or the mood with which we render that service. So the mood should be humble and at the same time enthusiastic, or extreme eagerness. And those two may seem contradictory, like go and stop. But it's not go and stop. It's humility doesn't say stop. Humility just says what we have as an estimation of ourselves before Krishna Lord. And when you're engaged, once again, when you're engaged in very sincere service, you realize how tiny and insignificant. Not just, oh, I'm supposed to be a humble person, because that's what they say in the books. So I should try to be humble. So that it's, you know, like, it's an effort, that's nice, but, you know, when there's a pinch, the humility disappears. And somebody becomes a tiger instead of humble. But it stays humble if it's from a spiritual position. The spiritual position is very sincerely striving to serve Krishna. I'm so tiny. So insignificant. It's true, we're tiny and insignificant. But that doesn't deplete our eagerness and enthusiasm. One doesn't cancel the other one out. Humility doesn't mean cowering and trembling off in a corner. It means, for Krishna's service, very enthusiastic, very eager, and before Krishna, so insignificant. And one amplifies the other, not cancels the other. On the spiritual platform. But try to do it on the material platform. Try to be really enthusiastic without a spiritual conception. Even though it's passion, without a spiritual conception. With a spiritual conception, it's just a speck in the vastness of existence. And that's a nice feeling. And then there's false egos gone. That's a relief. And the enthusiasm is that Krishna should be pleased, but I can't accomplish that unless he's very kind. He's very kind. So it's a loving exchange with Krishna. And that's what Brahma is disclosing to Narada, which means to us, that's how Krishna can be known. To a little extent. Not by any other qualification. Not by some opulence. Not by being very pious. And then the fruits of piety decorating your personality. By this one qualification. And when one is in this position of having this qualification, one recognizes, how can I know Krishna? But the little bit that can be disclosed by Krishna to that devotee, that's truth. Truth is very powerful. This fact is corroborated in the Bhagavad Gita, 1854 and 1855. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Nasochitina Kamsati Samak Sarvesha Bhuteshu Mad Bhaktim Labhate Param Bhaktimam Abhijanati Yavanyas Shasvi Tatvataha Titomam Tatvato Gyatva Ishite Tad Anantaram. The language that Prabhupada uses in these purports, I can cover the points, but the language itself is so beautiful. I feel like it's almost an injustice. There's this contrasting position that's being brought out. Prabhupada is saying that there are these, what he calls, high-grade activities. Austerity, charity, cultivation of knowledge, sacrifice, all very laudable, high-grade activities. Unto themselves, they cannot bring God realization. But when they're combined with this sincere service mood, only self-realization by attainment of the high qualifications such as etc., etc., can help one on the path of devotional service. But failing in devotional service, it doesn't assist. One remains in this struggling and imperfect condition of life. Then he spends some time Vishate Tadanantaram. He explains this word Vishate. So Vishate, literally it means enters into. So Prabhupada wants us to understand that it's not like one becomes, merges with the Supreme, not that kind of entering into. The devotee despises that notion. And they despise that notion because how can you serve? If you lose your identity, where's service? Forget it. I'm not interested in no service. Whatever it may mean. It's abominable. Sarvabhuma Bhattacharya was having conversation with Lord Chaitanya one time and said, Vyasadeva made a mistake. Because he speaks in one verse that Mukti Pade Swadaya Bhak, that if one stays engaged in the service of the Lord, Mukti Pade Swadaya Bhak, one gets liberation. That's not the fruit of devotional service. The fruit of devotional service is becoming the eternal servant of the Lord. Therefore he should have said Bhakti Pade Swadaya Bhak. Chaitanya said, Sarvabhuma, please consider what you're saying. There's no mistakes in the writings of the Vyasadeva. But it is so. And not only then he said that it is true that that mukti, or liberation, can be of different kinds. There are four kinds of Vaishnava liberation and one kind of impersonal liberation. But generally when people say mukti, they think of impersonal liberation. Merging with the Supreme. And within the merging of the Supreme, there's two kinds. Merging into the effulgence of the Lord, merging into the body of the Lord, like Shishu called it. Merging into the body of the Lord. And of those two, merging into the body of the Lord is worse. Because one sees the form of the Lord and one merges with the body of the Lord, abominable. Most abominable. Lord Chaitanya pacified Sarvabhuma Bhattacharya. Please understand, it's only the personality of Godhead that can give liberation. So when the word mukti pade was used, it refers to the person. So Sarvabhuma Bhattacharya said, well, alright, but bhakti would have been a better word. Bhakti pade. So the devotees don't like the impersonal sense of Vishate, entering into or becoming one with. But Prabhupada addresses this in a very interesting way. He uses a kind of reverse logic. It goes like this. This Vishate, by devotion, means to be able to participate in the association of the Lord in person. Bhakti, or devotional service to the Lord, means to become free from material entanglement and then enter into the kingdom of God. Excuse me, I read the wrong section. Even in material existence, one is merged in the existence of the Lord. This is an argument that Vishate doesn't mean merging with the existence of the Lord. Even in material existence, one is merged in the existence of the Lord. Then he gives this example. No materialist can disentangle self from matter, for the self is merged in the external energy of the Lord, as no layman can separate butter from milk. No one can extricate the merged self from matter by acquiring some material qualification. So, there's milk from a cow. Show me where the butter is. On the table, there's the butter and there's the milk. That's shaped from the cow. Where's the milk? Excuse me, where's the butter? It's there. And by churning process, the butter can come out. But before the churning process, the butter is merged with the milk. It's there. But you can't distinguish the two. It appears to be one. So, now this is reverse logic. Even in its material existence, there's the soul, there's the material elements, now find me the soul. Take your material qualification, find me the soul. Go ahead. You can't. By material qualification. But by spiritual qualification, you can. The soul is distinct from the body. But in the material condition, with material assets, material resources, you can't make that distinction. So, this visite, that's reverse logic, that the visite doesn't mean in the absolute sense merging with the Supreme Lord. Rather, it means entering into the presence of the Lord and engaging in transcendental activity with the Lord, transcendental exchanges with the Lord. Vishuddhe tadanantara. By means of devotion. You can extract the soul from its entanglement with matter, just like by churning you can just extract butter from the milk. And ordinarily, you know, if I saw milk from a cow, how do you get butter out of this? But if you know the process, then you can. So we can realize, simultaneously realize the soul distinct from matter, and at the same time realize the supreme soul distinct from the individual soul through the process of bhakti. Those two happen simultaneously. Self-realization and God-realization simultaneously. So, therefore, this word visite does not mean the sayuja mukti idea of merging with the existence of the Supreme Lord, but rather this other idea. They are distinct. Butter and milk are distinct. And the soul and the material elements are distinct, and the soul and the supreme are also distinct. And by bhakti, they all can be understood in the proper perspective, at least to some extent. The supreme can be understood to some extent. So, the final paragraph, Prabhupada is explaining. If it's difficult for Brahma, what to speak of the scholar? Compare the qualifications. And Brahma is saying, very directly and bluntly, I don't know. So now we're going to have a scholar come along and say, I know. And we're going to accept it? Excuse me, but no. It's not possible. Even a little bit not possible. For Brahma, it's a little bit possible. By his own admission. A little bit. But he's also very clear about his limitation. And one who is not clear about their limitation, they've got an ego problem. Big time. So then he concludes from Brahma Samhita, Vedeshu Durlabham, Adurlabham Atma Bhakta. To understand the Supreme Lord through the method of holding up the Vedas and through the lens of the Vedas, then God appears. Not by that speculative process, but through the devotional process, guided by the Vedas, adurlabham apa bhakta. Krishna can be easily adurlabham understood by devotion. Just a nice way of saying the same thing Krishna says in the 18th chapter. There's a nice flow here. He's described the whole process of creation. He's described his secondary part in that process of creation. He's described the role of the Supreme Lord beyond this material world, how he expands within the material world, and then sets everything up and engages Brahma in his service. And now then Brahma says, and everything that I've described about this system is perfect because of this spiritual qualification. Very eager and enthusiastic service to the Supreme. And therefore, by the mercy of the Supreme, I can explain things. And guess what? He's hardly knowable. Then, text 36, therefore, it is best for me to surrender unto his feet, which alone can deliver one from the miseries of repeated birth and death. Surrender is all auspicious and allows one to perceive all happiness. Even the sky, nice metaphor, even the sky cannot estimate the limits of its own expansion. So, what can others do when the Lord himself is unable to estimate his own limits? That's the verse. So it's like in the ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's using the same metaphor. He wants Arjuna to understand his position, Krishna's position, of being the rest and repose of all things. All things are in me, but behold, they're not in me. That's a direct contradictory statement. Everything is in me. He gives the example like the wind blowing in the sky. When the wind is blowing in the sky, it's within the sky. But, on the other hand, as the wind is blowing, does that mean that it's pushing the sky? No. Because the sky is more subtle. The wind is just moving about in the sky, and the sky is not moving. So what's bigger than the sky? That's Krishna is more subtle than the sky. The sky is a material element. And so all the material elements are moving about within the material elements, and they're moving about within Krishna. But Krishna is unchanged. Although it's only his energies that are changing. That seems contradictory, but it's not contradictory if one understands how the subtleties of matter, even the subtleties of matter, can help us come and understand of the subtleties of spirit more subtle than matter. It's of a different nature altogether. And Krishna is the source of all matter and spirit. So, this case, the metaphor is, as the sky cannot know its own limits, then we'll speak of Krishna. Who can understand the limits of Krishna? Then in the purport, Prabhupada goes into it. How do the scientists even know the limits of this universe? I mean, how do they measure it? Now they have some ideas of measurements and watch as the measurements change. And change and change and change. So that means they don't know. They're guessing. Maybe it's a good guess. Maybe it's, you know, not such a good guess. But it's a guess. It's not knowing. And ask the sky, what's your limits? ask Krishna, what's your limits? Even Krishna doesn't know his limits. How can a mortal know all there is to know about Krishna? And yet we'll offer Bhagavad Gita to somebody and they say, oh, I know all about Krishna. Didn't it? Some people speak like that. Oh, I know all about Krishna. So, the force of the message in text 36 is to recognize the inconceivable, unlimited nature of Krishna, even using our own limited rational faculty. We can't know. With our rational, with the best of our intelligence, we can understand Krishna's beyond our intelligence. Like Einstein. Prabhupada often quoted the statement of his saying, I stand at the edge of, as I advance in knowledge, something like this, I feel like that small child standing at the edge of the vastness of the ocean. Something like that. How does one measure the vastness of the ocean, a small child? And before God, standing before God. Tell some little something truth over here is a little something, maybe something profound truth. What is it? It's just a grain of sand on the beach. And Brahma, who has all these powers to create the universe, and again, think of all the details of the biggest brain scientists are trying to pick apart this information, but it's all in the Bhagavatam's expression is like a walnut in the hand of a child. It's in his grip. He knows those things, but he doesn't know, how can he's saying, how can I don't know Krishna? And inconceivable. That's the force of what Brahma is saying here. Narada, you have so many questions in it, but I'm very limited. I can say something, and the something that I'll say is perfect because of the Lord is controlling my mind and senses and my whole being because I fully surrendered unto Him. It's just a very, very beautiful purport. That Prabhupada speaking, the language doesn't do the message justice, but minds. Prabhupada is speaking from the verse Pitamaha. He expands. There's a father and then there's the father of the father. Pitamaha, the grandfather. But Lord Brahma is the grandfather of all grandfathers. He's the original being from whom all generations come. So we're all part of the same family. With Lord Brahma is our great, 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 great grandfather. And as a small child might go to the father to get some advice or direction or counsel, that father would go to Lord Brahma ultimately. So the Prabhupada's indication is we should all be sensible enough to take the words of Lord Brahma as guiding principles in our life. And someone wants to understand the diversities of the potencies of God, like the scientists may want to know, best just to go to Lord Brahma. Parasha Shakti Riva Daiva Shriyate, he quotes the verse from Sri Chashvatara Upanishad. Swabhaviki Jnana Balakriyacha. So the scientist is not likely to understand those different potencies, Jnana, Bala, and Kriya Shaktis of the Lord. But through the process of devotion, one can. And then one can understand through those potencies things happen in this world. Therefore, only those persons with the very poor fund of knowledge claim that they themselves are lords of all that they survey. And what can they survey? They cannot even survey the length and breadth of a small sky in one small universe. That he, the so-called material scientist, says that he would need to live for 40,000 years to reach the highest planet of the universe, being carried by a Sputnik. This is also utopian, because no one can be expected to live 40,000 years. Besides, when the space pilot returned from his travel, none of his friends would be present to receive him back as the greatest astronaut, as become fashionable for modern bewildered scientific men. He was not so impressed by space exploration. One scientific man who had no belief in God was very much enthusiastic in making plans for his material existence, and therefore he opened a hospital to save the living. But after opening the hospital, he himself died within 6 months. So one should not spoil his human life, which is obtained after many, many changes of bodies in 8,400,000 species of life, simply for the concocted material happiness of life through increasing artificial needs in the name of advancement of economic development and scientific knowledge. Rather, one should simply surrender unto the feet of the Lord and make a solution to all the miseries of life. That is the instruction of Lord Krishna directly in Bhagavad Gita, and that is the instruction of Srimad Bhagavatam by Brahmaji, the father of all living beings. Nice, huh? Anyone denying the surrendering process as recommended both in Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam, and for that matter in all authorized scriptures, will be forced to surrender unto the laws of nature. The living entity, by his constitutional position, is not independent. He must surrender either unto the Lord or unto material nature. Material nature is also not independent of the Lord, since the Lord himself has claimed material nature is mama maya, or my energy, and ne bhina prakritir ashtada, my separated energy, in 8 divisions. Therefore, material nature is also controlled by the Lord, as he has claimed in Bhagavad Gita, maya dyakshina prakriti suyate sacharacharam. And the living entities, being superior energy to matter, have choice and discrimination. Either surrender unto the Lord or surrender unto material nature, which is controlled by the Lord. Take a choice. Surrender to the Lord or surrender unto the Lord. By surrendering unto the Lord, one is happy and liberated. By surrendering unto material nature, living entity suffers. So, the end of all suffering means surrendering unto the Lord, because the surrendering process itself is bhava chidam, a liberation from all material miseries, and svastya ayanam, perception of all happiness, and su mangalam, the source of everything auspicious. Goes on for 2 more paragraphs. This is like an ecstatic purport. Therefore, liberty, happiness, things that people are after, right? Like life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. Just become an American. Liberty, happiness, and all good fortune can be attained by getting a green card. No. Only by surrendering unto the Lord, because he is full liberty, full happiness, and full auspiciousness. such liberation and happiness are also unlimited. And they have been compared to the sky, although such liberation and happiness are infinitely greater than the sky. In our present position, we can simply understand the magnitude of greatness when it is compared to the sky. We fail to measure the sky, but the happiness and liberty obtained in association with the Lord are far greater than the sky. That spiritual happiness is so great that it cannot be measured, even by the Lord Himself, not to speak of others. One more paragraph. It is said in the scriptures, Brahma Saukhyam Tvanantam. Spiritual happiness is unlimited. Here it is said that even the Lord cannot measure such happiness. This does not mean the Lord cannot measure it, and is therefore imperfect in that sense. The actual position is that the Lord can measure it, but the happiness in the Lord is also identical with the Lord and on account of absolute knowledge. So, the happiness derived from the Lord may be measured by the Lord, but the happiness increases again, and the Lord measures it again. And then again the happiness increases more and more, and the Lord measures it more and more. And as such, there is eternal competition between increment and measurement. So much so that the competition is never stopped, but goes on unlimitedly ad infinitum. Spiritual happiness is anandam buddhi vardhanam, the ocean of happiness which increases. The material ocean is stagnant, but the spiritual ocean is dynamic. Last sentence. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami has very nicely described this dynamic increment of the ocean of spiritual happiness in the transcendental person of Srimati Radharani, the pleasure potency of Lord Krishna. How nice. I mean, the message is we should take devotional service. But the Bhagavatam takes that topic and churns the topic and presents the topic in such poetically beautiful way. And Prabhupada in his purport, similarly, using the tools of language, has churned the topic further. Very compelling. And very pleasing. At the same time, very strong about so-called puffed up with academic knowledge. But it goes on. I didn't read the article, but I saw the headline of an article. Professor Dockums has just declared that any conception of God consciousness is simply nonsense. Something like that. That, a new paper he's published. Oxford University, Einstein Jr. And he's overtly demoniac, and so many people look up to him. Oh, he's so brilliant. But for the devotee, in Prabhupada, without flinching, such persons are dismissed like a flick of the wrist. Just fundamentally on the principle, although intellectual capacity may be awesome, to what end is it? It's taking him and anybody that follows him down. Fundamentally. But then there's so many innocent persons that may hear this elevated personality, so-called elevated personality, speaking and become bewildered. Yeah, maybe he's got something here. So, let's stick with some of Prabhupada's words in such language won't be confusing. expression?
Maharaj, what happens to the souls that merges into the Brahman? They lose the identity?
No, it's suspended. Temporarily. In a very amusing way, Vridhananda Maharaj has given the example. As in a football game, I don't know if you've seen football games, but when they get down towards the goal line, they give the ball to the fullback, and there's all these bodies, and they try to just squirm their way through all the bodies. Another example is, in America, it used to be, really long ago, they would have telephone booths. You know, a telephone booth? You close the door and you could, they still have them in India. They don't have them here anymore. So college students would see how many bodies you could pack inside a phone booth. Like that. Just packed up so tight. You can't express anything. You can exist. But that's about it. So existence carries on. But no exhibition of personality or quality or so packed up in the Brahma Jyoti.
Is it temporary?
Yeah, temporary. Temporarily suspended. Personality is temporarily, the features are there, like the seed is dormant. But the potential is there. So dormant personality is dormant, not expressed.
So they will fall down identity to the material.
Yeah. Patantyada. Aruya Krishna Param Param Tada Patantyada Yushwarangraya. The words in the Bhagavatam are described here.
On what basis they fall down?
Because they have desire.
Or they have desire.
They have let's think of it this way. The natural position of the soul is to be in a relationship with Krishna. Misusing their independence, that soul has fallen into this material existence, suffering so much, I want out of this material existence, but I don't want to acknowledge my relationship with Krishna, so I go into this suspended state. But after some time, that desire to be in that relationship with Krishna, the desire to have loving exchanges, the desire to exhibit my personality, it's there, but I have not having not taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, one again comes to this position. So the real solution is taking shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. Anything else?
Humility, you mentioned that we can cultivate humility by doing sincere service.
No, I didn't say it quite like that. I said there's a mood that accompanies service, a mood of humility and enthusiasm. And my point was that they don't contradict one another, they don't cancel one another.
How do we develop?
How do we? The how-to question. Well, if you try, a point that I made was if you try sincerely to serve, you'll recognize the limitations. Try to serve, try to chant with your mind absorbed in Krishna's holy name and you'll become humbled. On my own, I can't do this. You'll come to the position of, and then stay there by regular practice and by cultivation of that mood, by hearing and seeing examples of those who are genuinely humble. It's just the natural position of the soul, and we should cultivate that quality. So in the cultivation stage, it may feel or even look artificial, but it's practicing humility. We practice humility by serving others, by paying obeisances, by in our direct dealings with deity worship and chanting the holy name and study of the scripture. We can't enter into the understanding of this message without that humble mood. It becomes exhibited in the natural spiritual state. Always try to serve others in that humble mood, and that's how the humble mood comes.
Humble mood and austerities, like the Yajna sacrifice, what they were doing, that means that's a kind of ritualistic, right? Vaidhi Bhakti, because it involves some rules and regulations.
You lost it. Who's there?
In previous ages, the sages used to perform sacrifices.
Okay.
And, but...
I'm listening. Keep going.
With the when the mood was so humble, like how were they able to perform the vice?
Service.
As a service.
Service. What else?
No, this one. This one.
You first, go ahead.
Often here, Krishna himself does not know his full strength or knowledge. But knowledge is one of the opulences, six opulences, when we talk of divine embodiment.
He explains this way. He is all-knowing, but he's also unlimited, and therefore that which he is to know is ever-expanding. Don't put it in a material box and see it. Not like that. It's an appreciation of the unlimitedness of Krishna. He's all-knowing, at the same time he's all-expanding. Like Prabhupada said this, Krishna considers all of his glories, and when that's done, his glories have increased. So then he has to... So there's this calibration of increment and measurement. That's the idea. He is all-knowing. But he's also ever-increasing. He's dynamic, not static.
I was thinking of Maharaj that when you read sections like this from the Bhagavatam, it's just so joyful, and it's so joyful to even just read
that.
And yet there's some people who might be reading the same section with them, and all they can get is, some concept or some, just like, this framework in such a mechanical manner. And that's how they process everything in Krishna consciousness, even just like mechanically. How can we serve such individuals and try to... How can these messages actually touch their heart?
Well...
Because their whole calculation is...
It's just training, they're trained that way, but by association they can be trained another way. It depends on their willingness to go somewhere other. But you just, so what to do in those situations is you offer this, offer your association in the ways of disciplic succession and trust in Krishna's magic. And if somebody's really hard, then it's like drops of water wear away a stone. It's having its effect on a spiritual level, their mind and intelligence orientation may not evidence any shift. They're just acting on the spiritual platform. Just have confidence and trust in that. One of the strategies that sometimes works, let's say, a common strategy with people that have hardened mechanical and materialistic conceptions is to poke holes in those material conceptions. That's an approach that Prabhupada recommended that our Bhaktivedanta Institute people do. Sadhguru is very expert. So, you know, his approach is not present the alternative initially, but present, you know, the fallibility of the current models. That's one. You know, so just keep going full force with the explanations of devotion and trust that it will have some effect. Or go the other direction and says, you know, do the sumo wrestling program with them. Have them right on their own mat. And, you know, does your particular model hold? But then, you know, once you're in their territory, you better be prepared. Thank you.